When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
My guest today, Michael Fortenberry, co-founder and CEO of Protiv, boasts an incredible 30-year journey across diverse industries, with construction and technology as threads connecting his experiences, weaving a fascinating tapestry. Protiv, founded in October 2021, is a trailblazing productivity program that transforms project-based incentives. Michael, the driving force behind Protiv, aims to reshape the hourly pay system. By seamlessly connecting production and compensation, Protiv not only ensures fair remuneration, but also significantly reduces labor costs of corporations. The program's innovative approach allows business owners to directly correlate costs with production, resulting in a substantial savings. After 3 years of testing and evolution, Protiv has emerged as a transformative solution, revolutionizing compensation models. Investing time, energy, and of course, compensation into the success of your people remains one of the least understood yet most impactful metrics for any company. Demonstrating genuine care for our teams, both personally and professionally, reaps rewards in the form of increased performance. Protiv takes this ethos to a new level by empowering teams to award themselves with higher compensation through improved production. Employees on Protiv consistently earn 10% more than their traditional hourly counterparts. I'm eager to delve deeper into Michael's journey and explore how Protiv's program embodies the caring quality that sets it apart. Michael, welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast.
Hey, Dennis, super excited to be here, ready to talk. Let's go.
Let's start. I'm going to go right to that last thought and I'll have you peel back. One of the things that when I became aware of you that I was interested in was what you're doing, but also, and it appears nicely in this introduction, at least the clue, if not a strong hint, that you understand and appreciate that it's not simply a matter of increased production, more compensation, lower cost. It has a lot to do with the relationship between the owner or the manager or the supervisor and their crews and how they're treated, with this providing them an opportunity to be able to be motivated in an organized fashion. And motivation is a primary function of leadership. But again, the way I read this, and I'll let you talk extensively after I finish this thought, the way I read what you've created here is this is not about kicking the workers in the ass with a boot just to make them work faster. It's not about that.
You're right.
If it was about that, I probably wouldn't have had you on my show, because that's old school, still persisting in many ways. But that's old school. Forward thinking incorporates, again, some of the things I see hints about in the way you describe your business and your vision. So with that, tell us your story.
Yeah, that's very well said. I'm not even sure I can add anything to the way you outlined it. I guess I would start with this construct of culture and what are those foundational building blocks of great company culture, especially within our industry. I don't know that construction has ever led the marketplace in terms of great company cultures. There are winners, there are those who have struggled with it. I think we are trying to give a new tool to management to invest to their teams and bring that into the culture of how they align with their field staff. How do you get a worker at $25 an hour to care about quality, production, safety, teamwork, communication, this broader set of things that actually makes us money? A lot of times we think of the pay structure is it's an hourly exchange. You work 40 hours, you make $25 an hour, I give you, $1,000. That's an equation based on time, not on how good a teammate you are, not on how well you communicate, not on your attention to detail. The things that actually drive our performance are absent in the way that we compensate our teams. And so we sought to disrupt that and replace it with something greater. And we have found a path that creates just a better experience, a better relationship between the parties here, and one that you can build from to something better and something more culturally evolved.
Good. Would you say that, again, I'll go back to this notion of, again, a few choice words. One of them was significantly reduces labor costs. Mm-hmm. Talk about how that comes about with your program.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost as funny as reducing labor costs may seem to be a side benefit. We almost consider that a secondary benefit to what we do. Some people may come into our program thinking that's the primary thing they want. I would suggest the primary thing you want is alignment. But how do we reduce labor costs? It's actually pretty straightforward. When you estimate a project, you think you're gonna put in some concrete, or you're gonna put a roof on a house, or you're mowing a lawn, doesn't matter what the project is, you've got an estimated number of hours, man days, you know, percentage of revenue that you think are in that labor budget. If we can get the crew to use their brain, bring their brain to work, to think, to work as a team, to communicate well, to be productive, to do the job right the first time, to be safe. If they'll do those things, they can finish frequently under budget. If they're willing to do their part and bring that job in under budget from a labor standpoint, then we can now have some money left over with which we can share with that team. And by splitting that, we've effectively brought down our labor cost versus what we anticipated when we bid the job. And our team is making more money. The craziest math ever is when you see your wages go up by 10% on average, your hourly wage, yet your labor cost comes down by 3%. And that gross profit's dropping to your bottom line. That's a powerful day for a construction company.
Yeah, I would agree with that. From the crew members' point of view, in some of the places you've already implemented this program, what are you hearing at the ground level from the crew members about how they view this, what they think of it, et cetera?
Yeah, the secret to our program's success is that the workers get into it. I think a lot of us have tried incentive programs. But most of the people listening to this, if you're in construction, you've probably had some type of bonus whether it's a Christmas bonus or maybe you had a pay for performance type model or a piece rate structure in the past. I think a lot of us have tried those things, yet sometimes we don't get the behavior change at the worker level that we were anticipating. A lot of times, what we've learned is that that's because they don't understand the program. Maybe it's not simple enough for them to kind of follow how they make more, or even maybe more impactful, the system's not transparent. They can't physically see what behavior change is meaning to their paycheck. So one of the primary features of Protiv is what we call our calculator. It's part of our app that lets the workers on the ground calculate their estimated bonuses based on when they think they're going to finish and how well they're doing against the goals they've set as a team. Because they can interact with the budget, they can see their targets, the goals they've set, they know what they have left on hours and days left to finish a job. That allows them to see in dollars what's coming to them based on their performance. At that point, they begin to own the labor budget. They begin to perceive it's their money, which is what we want. Mm-hmm. I want the workers to view your labor budget as their money, because then they will treat it different. Because I hate to break it to you, they don't really care about your money. You know, mm-hmm. That's not their thing. They're somewhat accountable to their peers for money, but they very much care about their own money. So let's get them to feel like the labor budget's their money, and then you get behavior change. When they start to see that on their paycheck, they get into it. They start to talk about it. That's when you start to really see that evolution of their attention to detail, to their alignment with what matters to the company.
How do you push back on somebody's vague understanding about what you're doing here and saying, all you're trying to do is get these guys to work faster? That's all you're trying to do.
That's our system. We've solved that very definitively. The team earns the bonus, not the individual worker. So if Bob goes and maybe he's supposed to paint the back room and Jim's doing the front. If Bob doesn't do something right in painting that back room, Jim is losing out on his bonus because they don't get those bonuses until the job is done correctly and the customer's happy, etc. So the bonuses are team bonuses that they have to do the job correct or they cost each other money. What we're doing is getting the crew to actually care about the quality of what they do because they don't want to do the rework. I actually have a carpenter on video. His name's Frank. He actually said the quiet part out loud. He said his effective direct quote was, "My approach to quality changed when I went to ProPay because it cost me too much money to go back." And I just thought that was this transfer. That's a, what a moment, right? Mm-hmm. When they perceive rework the way that the owner perceives rework. If I can get them to view their attention to detail, their quality of what they do through the lens that we do, because it matters to them financially, that's where we're getting somewhere. We see quality levels go up. They don't want to have to go back.
Yeah, because that was my next question. How do you have in place the necessary guardrails relative to quality and also safety?
Yeah, there's a couple of pieces in the software that support this. One is that bonuses are approved retroactively to the job. So if you've, maybe you're in your particular industry, it's maybe you're in landscaping. If Mrs. Smith isn't happy with, you know, they planted the trees with the leaves in the ground, the roots sticking up, then you've got to go back and fix that. So Mrs. Smith isn't happy yet. You haven't approved, we call them propays, the budgets. You haven't approved that propay because the team has to go back. We also allow you to roll projects together. So if you're, some projects do well and some don't, you can pay a net bonus at the end. And you can also claw back bonuses if later you find out, you know what, you guys didn't do that particular work right. The inspector got out there and we had to go back and fix that cabling or that those tiles weren't installed correctly. They weren't straight and the homeowner's not happy. Whatever that part of that job is, they have to go fix it. You can claw back any bonuses paid. You can also, again, don't approve them in the first place until the job's done correctly. So there's a few different pieces in that.
So as far as, again, I want to keep drilling on this because I think it's at first glance, this looks interesting, really interesting, compelling, in fact, what you've designed and developed. But then I can also think about the different stakeholders that will look at this and have, and maybe not the same view that you have and that you intend for the potential of this going forward. And one constituency or one stakeholder group, part of the construction industry uses workers who are open shop, and other parts of the industry and other contractors use union labor.
Sure.
Two different sets of circumstances. In the early stages of your rollout of this, have you encountered and had to deal with, how do we make the case? Because when you're talking union, you're talking a need to give deference to the collective bargaining agreement that the contractor you're trying to sell this program to wants to utilize. How has that come up so far and how are you handling it?
Yeah, so we've done open shop and we have prevailing wage projects. We haven't done a union shop on Protiv yet, but there's nothing that limits our ability to do so outside of the terms of their contract with that shop. Mm-hmm. So in some cases, union contracts allow for incentive compensation on top of wages, which is what our system is. There's no downside to it. It's all upside. In some cases, the union contracts don't allow for any variable compensation above. Mm-hmm. So just because they want to keep wages all the same. So it's really up to the way that that contract reads, if our system is permissible in that agreement. Certainly, if they allow for incentive compensation above their base wage rates that they have, their negotiated wage rates, then certainly our system is powerful in that environment. It's a chance for them to earn more on top of what they're earning today. And who doesn't want to do that?
Does part of this boil down to, in terms of the bonusing, The bonusing is a recognition of them completing a quantity of work in a fewer number of hours.
That's where that's funded from. That's okay. So if there is a pool of money left because we've beat the budget, mean we didn't have to do rework, we got it done right the first time, we've saved on our forecast number of hours, then there's some money left over, and then the company kind of has, we call it a bonus pool. It's effectively, if I've saved a dollar, what am I going to do with a dollar? How much of it goes to the workers? How much of it comes, you know, saved by the company? And then we prorate the worker payouts based on how many hours they've each put into the project. You have multiple people on the job, as well as it can be prorated by their wage rate if you would like.
I think the challenge of the union environment is going to be pretty significant, at least based on my experience.
Yeah, it's 8-9% of the marketplace. I would love to serve what they do.
That's a practical way to look at it.
Yeah. It's I'm happy to, and I'd love to be of service to those shops. I think it's upside. It's a chance for them to, you know, to bring their elevated skill set to the table and bring those jobs in ahead of schedule, do it right the first time, follow, you know, and you can create policy around the bonus programs as well. Once you've created this pool of money, maybe your policy side to this says, well, everybody has to wear a blue shirt, or everybody's got to sign into their toolbox talks, or, you know, whatever those other policy structures are that you want to put into this, or that's unique to each company. So we're excited to do this for the union side. We're excited to do this for the open shop side. To us, it's about alignment between the crews in the field and the management team that set this initial budget.
Yeah. Are your, I'll call them early adopters, the companies that have, are using your program. I'm guessing that they're primarily trades contractors.
Yes. So our system isn't designed for your general contractor outside of those who have self-performance teams. Or if you sub all your work, maybe you're a painting company that doesn't actually have any painters on staff, which those exist, then our program is designed for the contractor that carries the labor.
So what are the early adopters telling you in terms of how they view what they're experiencing?
Yeah. So we had a client the other day said that their GP increased 7% with no other changes, an irrigation company, with no other change to their operations year over year. 7% GP. And that story is not that unusual. It's, I didn't just cherry pick out a big one and just say, oh, look at this. That approach is very, that's not an uncommon kind of performance level. It depends, right? There's, I don't think a commercial electrician is going to get 15% higher production. But if you're, you know, certain labor heavy trades, you know, painting and landscaping and concrete, some of these guys, their production levels can increase quite a bit when they want to. Right. So a lot of this is there's an energy level that the workers put into it, especially if you have a lot of rework because of quality issues. By getting their crew to want to finish this work on time the first time. I think all of us have had those jobs where the last 7% of the job takes 17-20% of the budget, and we're never quite sure why we can't seem to finish. I promise you, if you got 12 people out on that job site that are, they want to get off that job site because they want to get it done, they'll figure out what's dragging that out, right? You want to get them to care. See, that's the battle, really, Dennis, is to get the field team to care, because once they care, it's better. Right. It almost doesn't even matter what else is happening. The minute that they're caring and they bring their brain into the job, you're already ahead of where you would have been. And I guess I'd point out that all of this works when you make it part of your company culture. And I think that that's what trips people up sometimes, is that they think of this as simply the financial transactional side of it, which the software handles. The reality is, the minute you move to a performance-based compensation, you open up different conversations with your crew. You need to be ready for them to ask questions they don't ask today. They're going to say, please don't send Bob back because Bob is slow, right? They don't want Bob on their team because he costs them money. They're going to be like, boss, you know, that paint wasn't delivered this morning. You get that Sherwin-Williams guy on the phone because we're ready to go. You're costing us money. Right? They care about different stuff. Now, you've got to talk to them about budgets now. You've got to talk to them about money. Think conversations you might not currently be having. So I always tell people, it's more conversation with your workers to run a performance pay system than if you don't. If you don't, it's easier because you just pay them by the hour. Doesn't matter. The minute you're doing this, you better be ready to talk to them about new stuff.
And that's what you're seeing?
All the time. We find, hand down, our clients who perform best are the ones who make this deeper part of their company culture. They care about their company culture. They're investing into their people. It's a part of us caring about the goals of our workers, right? In the end, we have goals as a company. Our workers have goals. Sometimes it's, I want to get promoted. Sometimes it's, I want to stay in this job for 20 years. So whatever their personal goals are, we need to understand that and provide to service where they want to go, where they'll find someone who will. So we find that this is a tool for a company to invest into caring about the goals that their team has, their workers. What do they personally want from the relationship that they have here at work? And how do we help them get there? If you help enough other people get where they want to go, somebody said this recently, I thought it was really good, then you'll get where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. I
thought that was pretty good.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So their potential bonus is visible to them.
Yes, sir.
So as they go through, you know, a project, they're on a project for a couple of weeks, are they inputting the basic information for a job, hours, material costs, equipment, tickets, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we pull that data from the operating systems that companies use today. So, you know, they have time tracking systems. You've got a budgeting tool of some sort, or ERP or CRM, somewhere where your budget lives. We'll pull that data in, or you can enter it into our software when you budget for a new job. We can do milestones and cost codes for bigger projects. So we have jobs that last 2 years. We have jobs that last 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it just depends on the nature of the work you do. So once we have those budgets, we have your cost codes, we have your phases, whatever, however you have your project broken out, then we're pulling the actual time data. So one, I have budget, now I have actual coming out of your time tracking. So I know whether you're on BuilderTrend or Procore or QuickBooks Time or ClockTrack, any busy, any of these platforms out there, we can pull that data into our software. Now we can see your budget, we can see your actual, and that's what we let the workers interface with. They can see our budget was 1,000 hours. We've used 800. We have 200 left. How far along are we? Do we think we've got 10 hours left? Do we think we've got 150 hours left? What do we have left to finish this job in our mind? And if we hit that goal, how much of a bonus do we get on our check?
Yeah, that all seems good. I don't use big words. I mean, why would a trades contractor, and again, we both know that the sub tier of contractors, the trades and especially contractors, the vast majority of them, I think maybe as much as 70 or 80% of the companies or entities that are involved in the industry are small companies.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And what we found is that most of the people we talk to say some version of the sentence, oh, I used to try and do this. I tried to do it. I wanted to do it. I've got a spreadsheet for this. You know, I've always thought about this. We've been talking about this. What we've created here isn't a new idea. It's a software to do what we've all been talking about forever. What we needed was, everybody's been using Excel to try and manage an incentive compensation model tied to production. And it simply breaks under real life, right? Moving people on and off of jobs, jobs that last more than one pay period, multiple people on a job. I move people around, different pay rates. What about this job goes over, this job goes under? It's complex. It's actually impossible, arguably, to do in spreadsheet. It's very easy for the software to handle that complexity. So I can handle the fact that you move your people between jobs all the time. It doesn't matter to us. It's super easy for the software to handle that.
How's the rate of adoption?
Considering we just kind of put this thing out into the market last year, it's been an incredible response from people. We knew we were onto something, but when you go to a trade show and you see the response from people saying, this is amazing. We had a company just the other day, it's a big company, 800 employees in the field, and their CEO called this his mission. You know, he said, my mission is now to solve for incentive compensation for my field workers.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, the workers are our most important commodity. That's what we sell, is their work.
Mm-hmm.
We sell their ability to go accomplish this set of tasks that we need to build this thing or renovate this thing or fix this thing. And that's the group that we don't have enough of. We don't have enough skilled labor. It's consistently the number one problem our industry faces. Mm-hmm. So we need to get more from the teams we have, and everybody recognizes that. So our feedback from people is kind of like, if you guys can actually do this, this is going to change the industry. If I can get 10% more production from the people we have, that actually is enough additional capacity to solve the underlying labor shortage of the industry. Well, assuming every single person out there buys what we do, but
which would be okay with you if that happened.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. I would make the time. I'll stay up late tonight. The reality is, if you have a labor shortage of 10% in your company or whatever, we can get 10% more from your team by and large. That's not a stretch at all. They've got it in them. And we love this journey we're on.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure you've heard this or some version of this, and that is when you look at productivity in the construction industry and you boil down to how productive an 8-hour day is. Yeah. The consensus is that, you know, in that 8-hour day on a percentage basis, anywhere between 35 and 40% of the time on that job during a particular day, nothing was happening.
Yeah. I've seen those stats. I just saw a brand new report within the last year. I saw a copy of it the other day that we've often quoted this McKinsey research that was like production productivity or construction productivity is up 1% over the last 25 years or whatever. The reality is another research came out that it's actually worse than that. It's actually down.
Yeah.
We're actually slower at building things now than we were in the 70s. The funny thing is some of that's for good reason. We have better safety standards. We have better environmental standards. There's some reasons that that's not all bad, but it's not good either. And so how do we get the team to want to close that gap? Not just management, but get the workers to want to close it and to want to bring that job in as efficiently as practical.
Yeah.
So, and with at the same time, create your safety policies and make that part of the production system and the bonus mm-hmm. system.
Sure.
So what you can't do, OSHA doesn't want you and doesn't allow you to pay a bonus if they don't have an accident. But what you can do, OSHA does not mind this, is if you tie bonuses to their preventative steps, right? Mm-hmm. So do your toolbox talks, you know, your PPE, whatever other kind of processes you want to have built right into your preventative side. Tie that into the bonus program so the team can see this pool of money. They know they're going to make more, but hey, Bob, you know, quit balancing the ladder on top of the bucket on top of the roof, you know, yeah. whatever, you yeah. know, let's be safer.
The logic's undeniable. I'd have to say that, at least the way we've had a conversation about it, you are generally doing something which I think is hugely important. And that is when you talk about caring, you talk about motivating people. You talk about transparency in terms of sharing information for the crews. Those are all the kinds of things that are the qualities that can help a company be more successful. That's just the way it is. I'd almost find it, you know, again, it's hard to think of, and I'm not a technical guy at all, as you can probably tell, because I can't even get my camera to work on this interview. So I'm talking to you from a dark place. But I think that, you know, there's a lot of generational bias in our industry around things like, you can't show that information to the crew, they'll never understand it, or that won't make a difference to them, or that'll just motivate them to shortcut and be unsafe, as opposed to being as efficient as possible and being safe and producing a quality project or product, and that means getting it right the first time, which and that has a bunch of implications that end up falling into the lap of whoever is doing the planning and managing. So again, that's one of the things I think about this, that transparency piece is something that kicks it right into the view of the people at the crew level. And if it does that, it does provide some kind of encouragement to management not to rest back on the old biases about they'll never understand that. You know, that doesn't mean anything to them. Your thoughts?
We have found in our own, we have a renovation painting company in New York City. Probably have 130 people in the field this summer. And that we have found that our line workers at the most entry level can understand a labor budget. Mm-hmm. They understand we have X number of hours to do this work. Keep it, it's that simple. So in the end, think about this. When you hire someone, we hire them to do this task, right? We're gonna have Bob put shingles on, or we're gonna have Jim put install conduit or whatever this task is. But you get for free, every employee comes, gets a, you get a free brain. Now, some of those brains are better than others, I'll give you, but they all come with one. Mm-hmm. And you should do your best to get the most from that brain that you possibly can, because they see things you don't see.
Right.
They're on your job sites. They can give you feedback and information that you don't have today. If nothing else, through lifting their production and quality, because you're incentivizing them to do so. And trust me, if there's a way for them to do better, now they're going to call you and tell you. They're going to come in your office and say, you got to replace that tool. It just doesn't get the job done. We could be better if we had this tool instead. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong, but at least they're thinking.
Yeah.
I'll take that every time.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, even though you haven't been able to see me, and again, our listeners don't know that I like to see my guests, even though we just dropped this as an audio file, but this time went by too fast, didn't it?
Dennis, very grateful for taking a look at what we do. It's been super exciting for us to build this, and we know that we're empowering workers at a new level, and that keeps us motivated every day.
Yeah. I wish you the best with this. I hope you'll stay in touch.
Yes, sir.
And if I can ever do anything to be of help to you in any way, you know where to find me. I think you've really got something.
Thank you very much.
I think I did see a news article that talked about some pretty significant amount of investment in Protiv.
Yeah.
So some smart money thinks you've got something too.
Yeah, it's got some investors to put some capital in so we can begin to build out some more products. We have some great new features coming. More features about integrating the management team to the workers and empowering the workers to know more, do more, see more, communicate better. So that's our thesis, and we're going to keep investing into that space.
Good. I look forward to seeing all your new innovations. Thanks so much for being on my podcast.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Softest Steel Podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Softest Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Softest Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Softest Steel Podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.